What is up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. My name is Herms, his name is Tyler Rowe, and this week we are into the regular season, taking on a new format, baby. Haha, we're going to be trying out something new for you folks. We're only going to be coming out once a week, but we're going to try to make sure that our weekly episode is jam-packed with as much information as possible. So we're calling this one Crossing Notes. It is Herms and Tyler O. You know, we're taking notes as we're watching these games over the weekend and stuff. We have our thoughts. We have waiver recommendations and things that we think you need to be paying attention to. And we're just going to all lay it out there in one fun episode. So before we get into any of that and hop into week one reaction time, Tyler, how you doing, my guy?
Dude, thrilled. We got 1 week down. The football season is here. Don't have a ton I want to talk about because we have a lot to talk about within the meat of this pod. So let's just jump in, my man.
Absolutely. We will get right into crossing our notes with the first game that happened in the NFL season way back on Thursday between the Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys. Definitely some very interesting things happened in this one. You know, we can go ahead and start with just a note that I had from the game. Even though Miles Sanders looked very ineffective running behind Javonte Williams, who we will talk about a little bit more as we get further into this game, it does kind of suggest to me that there is a secondary role in this Dallas backfield. Rookie Jaden Blue was inactive because of his injury, but I do think if he gets dropped by a manager who maybe isn't paying super close attention and just saw he was out or whatever, you know, go ahead and scoop up Jaden Blue. He is still widely available, 45.5% of ESPN leagues and 32% of Yahoo leagues as of this recording. How do you feel about that? And just honestly, the Dallas backfield in general, because there's kind of a lot to break down there.
Yeah, Javonte Williams, clear winner here in week one, a guy I was fading completely. So maybe I got to eat a little bit of crow here, but I don't think it was necessarily something that we can hang our hats on. I mean, the two touchdowns were great, but we're not going to be able to see that every single week. You know, without those touchdowns, it's just 15 rushes for 54 yards and a couple catches, right? So touchdown dependent game made him look pretty good. I'm not going to be probably too excited about Javonte Williams. I think like he's still more of a low end RB2 going forward. It's just he had a great first week. As you know, take those two touchdowns away, those get thrown to somebody else. No one's even talking about the guy right now. So I don't think this is the kind of rushing touchdown we can expect from the Cowboys and Javonte Williams. So for me, you know, he went from someone not on my radar to somebody who's like, yeah, you know, we could probably flex him. But I would even consider Javonte Williams a shaky running back too rest of season. Good to see him have a good game, though, as a guy I kind of wrote off.
Absolutely, my man. And then on the other side of the ball with the Eagles, you know, definitely kind of a frustrating performance from A.J. Brown, only having that one catch, which I think, if I remember, came after midnight. So people who went to bed didn't even get to see him do it. Are you worried about him for the rest of the season? Or is this something where you're just kind of like, eh, whatever, it's fine?
Not worried at all. Yeah, it sucked, but he still was out there. It's not like he was on the bench doing nothing. AJ Brown came through in this game with an 87% snap share. He had the most routes run of any wide receiver on that team. Yes, the box score was super disappointing, but I do not believe that we're going to see 7 targets to Dallas Goedert every single week. So yeah, there's going to be some frustrating weeks with AJ Brown. Totally get it, and this is certainly one of them, but stay the course. He was still able to get over 1,000 yards last season. Same offense, missed a couple games, not sweating at all. I thought he went in a very fair spot in drafts, kind of as a low-end wide receiver one, maybe high-end wide receiver two. Still believe that that's exactly where he'll finish at end of year. Not sweating AJ Brown.
Oh, for sure. You know, some players just end up with bad games. And trust me, folks, that is going to be a rather substantial theme throughout the remainder of this episode, because it wasn't just AJ Brown. He was just kind of the first guy to do it this week to put up a bit of a stinker. You got any other thoughts on this contest before we move into our next game?
Nah, man, let's get rolling.
Alrighty, so we can now get into the game that came to us live from Sao Paulo, Brazil. What a fun time that was between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Los Angeles Chargers. Now, you know, like I said, we're going to be interjecting our waiver wire thoughts into this show, so that way it kind of just flows as one sort of, you know, just homogenous podcast experience. Two of my top wide receiver targets on the waivers this week come from this game. First, Quentin Johnston with the Los Angeles Chargers. Two touchdowns is a little bit fluky. We definitely can't assume that he's going to catch a pair of tutties every single week. But hey, 5 for 79 on 7 targets, that's definitely some pretty hefty work. And also, I want to point out that the Chargers' tight ends weren't very involved in this passing game. I know that, you know, Will Dissly at times last year was kind of an interesting piece of this offense. Was that going to be a thing at least through this first game? I don't think so. Can they support three receivers? Might be a bit of a stretch, but the fact that there's no tight end does kind of help. I'm big on Quentin Johnston, and I'm also big on Hollywood Brown. And I'm going to kick it back to you for this, because obviously 16 targets is just a crazy amount. 10 catches. He's looking like the chain mover guy without Rashee Rice in the lineup potentially, but there was also an injury to one of his teammates that could have impacted this as well. So just kind of your thoughts on Hollywood Brown and this Chiefs passing game in general, because of, you know, the thing I alluded to, Xavier Worthy got hurt.
Yeah. So QJ, I'll start with QJ actually, because I want to start.
For sure.
He was still, you know, Keenan Allen had 10 targets, Ladd McConkey had 9, and then QJ had 7. So, you know, I still think he's the third option there in the pass game. Those two, again, two touchdowns are fluky. I certainly think that QJ needs to be talked about as a good flex option going forward, but you also have to understand that he's the third option there, probably behind Keenan Allen and Ladd McConkey. So there's something to be said there. I also would like to point out from the Chargers side of the ball is Omarion Hampton, who everyone seems to be down on, basically has the exact same stat line as Javonte Williams without the touchdowns. And everyone's really pissed off about, you know, Hampton and not being good, and everyone's all big on Javonte Williams. We know touchdowns are fluky. Yeah. So for me, it's like, I'm not panicked on Hampton at all. The usage was there. He's clearly the starting running back. He's getting insane, I would say, bell cow usage, as there's no one else really running the football there. I mean, we got one carry from Najee Harris. Like, it is absolutely Omarion Hampton's backfield. So stay the course on Hampton. I mean, if someone's panicking, I'd be buying low there for sure. Shifting to the Chiefs side, absolutely looking at Hollywood Brown. Love to get him. 16 is probably not going to happen again. But if Worthy's out, we know Rashee Rice is out for a while. Double-digit targets every week for this short period of time. Let's do it. I mean, Juju's not going to cut into it too much. Kelsey certainly isn't going to cut into it too much. I don't think anything else really matters for the rest of those players. So I think when I look at this, you know, Hollywood Brown kind of ridiculous target opportunity or target share, I think part of it could stick. So I absolutely would be looking to grab Hollywood Brown and QJ off the waiver wire as kind of flex help in my PPR leagues.
For sure. And I'm glad you mentioned Juju, because outside of like a deeper league, maybe 14, 16 teams, especially, maybe that's when you start thinking about it for Juju Smith-Schuster. But like, don't get it twisted. It's definitely Hollywood out of anybody on this squad. And, you know, a little note that, you know, we didn't go over, you know, in our little pre-show, but Isaiah Pacheco kind of let me down a little bit. That was disappointing. The Chiefs backfield was something that like I had kind of forgotten about. But then obviously we're talking through this, pops back to the forefront of my brain, and I'm like, yo, Kareem Hunt was out there about half the time. The splits were like relatively even, but like, man, Isaiah Pacheco, is this something that you're worried about? I'd really like to get your kind of vibes on this, because his ADP was relatively affordable, but I think a lot of people like myself were kind of banking on him being this sort of like value RB2 if you started heavier with pass catchers.
Yeah, I mean, there's serious concern with Pacheco. I mean, he was at 51% of the snaps, had the same amount of opportunities as Kareem Hunt. We are seriously concerned about Pacheco going forward, without a doubt. We are not counting on him as an RB2 in the short term.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, that's definitely going to put me back into the waiver wire discussion for some of my running backs, potentially, in some of my leagues. But, hey, happens to the best of us. It's going to happen to all of us eventually. And, hey, maybe there's a running back from this next game. Steelers Jets. Now, that ended up being a much more entertaining barn burner than I thought it was going to be. What are some of your thoughts on what we saw the Pittsburgh backfield? That was kind of weird, right? That was kind of weird.
It's gross, man. I don't want any part of it. Like, I definitely understand people panicking on Caleb Johnson, but I think that the signals were there. It's not a guy that you probably should have been starting in the first place. But I also think to work in maybe Caleb Johnson's favor to not drop him is nothing that Jaylen Warren or Kenny Gainwell did was necessarily impressive, right? So I think there were some reports that maybe Caleb Johnson was being a rookie, was getting in the doghouse there with Aaron Rodgers. That could be fair. He's got to earn his keep. But I'm not interested in any of these players in this backfield. And then for the pass catchers, man, I think Calvin Austin's probably a little bit of a mirage here. I think you've said that, and I definitely would agree. But it's tough to get too excited. Even in a game, it's funny, even in a game where they score 30-plus points, I look at these pass catchers, and even so, like, obviously Metcalf's going to have some interest going forward. But, man, tough to get excited for me, honestly, just with any of these offensive weapons on the Steelers. Good for probably real-life football, but for fantasy, man, I'm having a hard time having confidence in anybody, probably outside of DK Metcalf going forward.
I'm with you. Calvin Austin is one of those players very good to have on the offense, and there are games where they do scheme up some pretty fun plays for him, get him some deep shots, but he also has a tendency to go away. It's not something that is very consistent, unfortunately. So again, unless, you know, same thing with Juju Smith-Schuster, if we're talking like a 14-16 team, you can start to think about that. But I think for a lot of you out there, it's not something I'm particularly enthusiastic about. Then on the other side, their pass catchers, you know, basically Garrett Wilson and pretty much nobody else. Who would have thunk? I do want to get your thoughts, though, on the Jets backfield potentially with, you know, Breece Hall obviously got a ton of that volume. Now's the time for me. If you have recipes for preparing to eat crow out there, please send them to @herms.bsky.social. I would love to hear, because I was very wrong about the whole Breece Hall committee thing. But Braylon Allen did punch in a touchdown. That was kind of cool. Yeah. Any thoughts about that goal line?
Yeah, what? I was going to say, after Breece Hall took six carries for 9 yards, I'm not sure how often he's going to be getting that. So, man, this is Breece Hall's backfield. He was a value all offseason. He's so much better than the rest of these running backs, and they just can't hide it. Breece has turned up to be a value, but I don't think there's anything here I can tell you that you shouldn't already know. To see Fields do this against the Steelers defense, I think, was the most impressive part of the day. And I think Fields is a locked and loaded top 10 fantasy quarterback rest of the season. No questions asked. If he does this against the Steelers, it's only going to get better.
It's so frustrating having to watch this man go up against the Steelers defense, just torching them, knowing, hey, Steelers front office, that guy, you could have just brought him back. That could have worked. I mean, they still won the game, but it just makes me very sad. But the quarterback they do have, just one final note from the game, I guess, Aaron Rodgers, 4 touchdowns. Kind of cool. You vibing with it or nah?
I think he's a fine QB2 option. We'll see. We'll see. I think he could slow down. He's getting pretty old, but it was good to see Aaron Rodgers do well. I think he was just very motivated against his former team.
Yeah, probably. You know, I'm a lot closer to that line of thinking as well. There are better quarterbacks out there. If you need to pick up a quarterback off the waiver wire to plug in and get immediate help, you can actually think about a player from this next game that we're talking about. And that player specifically would be Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Penix. Now, the issue, he does go up against the Minnesota Vikings defense next week on the road. It's a tough week 2 matchup. But then he comes back in week 3 against Carolina and week 4 against the Washington Commanders, much easier defenses to go up against. And even though he only threw for the 1 touchdown in the game, Penix Jr., very close to the 300-yard mark and 42 passing attempts. It does seem as though this Falcons offense may want to get a little bit more aerial. Is that a name that if you are somebody disappointed by your quarterback that you would be interested in?
Sure. He'd be a preferred streamer for me. I definitely was taken aback by Penix looking pretty good. I think the real takeaway from here is simply just Drake London, 15 targets, but only 8 for 55. So he's still a focal piece of this offense. Stay the course with London. And then Pitts going 8 for 7 for 59. I mean, frankly, he could be a decent streamer going forward. I'm not going to hold my breath, but it was nice to see Pitts look decent and stay involved from the Falcon side. And then, honestly, like, I could be pretty quick here with the Bucs, but the Bucs are exactly who we thought they were. Mayfield's good. It's Bucky Irving's backfield. And, yeah, and Evans is really good, and so is Igbuka. I say it's exactly how we wanted it and exactly what we thought it would be because we knew Igbuka was good. Those 2 touchdowns could easily go to Evans next week, and they will have the same kind of stat line. So no surprises with how the Bucs operated whatsoever. I don't have anything really to offer here.
Oh, for sure. I'm definitely with you there. Shout out Igbuka. Definitely glad that he was able to ball out in his NFL debut. Not very often that you get to catch 1, let alone 2 touchdowns the first time you get out there on the field. All right, so I think we're going to take a quick break. We're going to get into our first commercial, and then when we come back, we will get into the rest of Sunday's action, starting with Cincinnati and Cleveland. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. I am still Herms, he is still Tyler O, and we are still talking about week one of the fantasy football season in 2025. And we will resume our review of the slate by getting into the Cincinnati Bengals Cleveland Browns game. The Browns actually are some pretty big winners out there on the waiver wire this week. They have two players that I think a lot of managers should be interested in picking up. We'll start with the one that I think probably has a little bit more short-term value than long-term value, especially because at some point, Quinshon Judkins is going to get back into the fold, probably have a sizable role in this backfield. But until that happens, fellow rookie Dylan Sampson ended up with 20 touches, including 8 catches, for 64 yards through the air. Shout out PPR upside. That was an absolutely stellar performance. I think anybody who needs immediate running back help could definitely look there. Jerome Ford looked kind of sloppy, and the only kind of bummer is that, you know, Rocket Sanders came in and vultured that dang touchdown. Otherwise, it might have been able to go to Dylan Sampson, and he could have had a better day. And then the last name I'll highlight is the tight end Harold Fannin Jr. They got pretty creative with him, man. They gave him the ball a lot. They had him line up, you know, a little bit in line, but also doing some slot stuff. They got him a touch out of the backfield, more kind of like an H-back role than, you know, your traditional inline tight end. But, you know, Fannin, dude, he's cooking, bro. I'm trying to figure out how seriously I'm kind of taking this, though. So what's your vibe on real or not with Harold Fannin Jr.?
I think it's real, man. Absolutely, I think it's real. They clearly want to run two tight end sets, and it's kind of like a weird version of two tight end sets because, in my opinion, he's like almost not a tight end in some ways, but, you know, for the sake of it, he's tight end. I mean, we're seeing a 72% snap share from Fannin and an 84% snap share from Njoku. This is easily a situation where you can look at it and not be afraid of Njoku losing a role because his role is going to stick. It's just they're going to use both tight ends and just run Tillman and Judy out there the whole time. I mean, this is basically their offenses. You know, they have Njoku, they have Fannin as the tight ends, they have Judy and Tillman as wide receivers, and then they're running, you know, some form of running backs. I think the one thing I definitely would want to hone in on here is I do think Dylan Sampson can keep this similar role, even if Quinshon Judkins comes back. I think Ford is the issue. He didn't do much in this game. He's always been a replaceable level player. But Quinshon Judkins, while he can catch balls, he's certainly not known for it. And I do think while we could see Quinshon Judkins get more on the ground, there could be a role very much like this open for Sampson where he does see himself, you know, as a, you know, flex play in PPR league. So some people are going to be asking themselves, well, what if, you know, if Judkins come back? Are we still on Sampson for the waivers? I think I am. I'm still going to take that swing.
Oh, yeah, Vibe City, man. That's definitely a good call. You know, it got me to kind of change my perspective because you're right. The pass catching part of it, that's never really been Judkins' bag. So, I mean, if he continues to prove himself in that capacity, definitely doable. Real quick, before I throw it over to you for any Bengals takeaways, Cedric Tillman, under 50% rostered on ESPN. You down? You not down? Maybe?
Probably not, man. Not gonna lie. I don't think there's enough room there. The Bengals defense, while they might have played all right, is probably one of the worst ones. I would rather take shots on like Hollywood Brown or QJ before Cedric Tillman. So that's kind of where I stand on things. I think in deeper leagues, sure, but in your regular size leagues, man, I don't think he's a guy that presents much upside here in the short term or long term. Fine to put him on your bench if you have a terrible bench, but generally speaking, there's going to be other wide receivers that I'd prioritize over Cedric Tillman.
No, fair enough. And there's another one, you know, a few games from now that we're going to be highlighting that I think people might be more interested in for sure. Any thoughts on the Cincinnati side of things before we get into our next game?
Nah, man. I mean, it's obviously disappointing from the T. Higgins and Jamar Chase side of things, but they're the top two wide receivers, and there's no other wide receivers out there that I believe even got a single pass. And then obviously Noah Fant had 5 targets, he tied Jamar Chase in targets, was second in the team in yards with Jamar Chase and got that touchdown. I'm not interested in Fant. I'm not interested in Gesicki. I never was in the first place. It's kind of more like a gross split, I believe. We're going to see Gesicki with like a 31% snap share there and then Fant with a 50%. You don't want a platoon at tight end in fantasy. So just stay the course. Don't get trapped or think that Fant's going to be something because he caught a touchdown here. The guys are the guys that we want. We move along.
Absolutely. We move along to probably the most depressing game, especially if you're a fan of the Miami Dolphins. They got obliterated by the Indianapolis Colts, led by their intrepid starting quarterback, Daniel Danny Dimes Jones. Yeah, the revival. He did it. He did it, folks. He scored 2 rushing touchdowns, ended up having himself a pretty good day as a passer. I think if you need a quarterback, he could be somebody that you could look at. Now, kind of like I was saying earlier with Penix, the week 2 matchup does stink. They do have to host the Denver Broncos that basically just ate Cam Ward alive. We'll, you know, talk a little bit about that a little bit later on. But after that, the schedule does kind of lighten up a little bit. Danny Dimes could maybe be an interesting option. And I think, you know, his presence being this good kind of sets the tone for the rest of this offense and how we feel about especially some of these pass catchers, right?
Yeah, and don't have anything to add. Just agree with you with Daniel Jones being a legit option here for fantasy. He looked good as a passer. 7 rushes for 26 yards, 2 touchdowns. Things are good there. A couple notes that I definitely want to go over. Obviously, Jonathan Taylor is still him. But DJ Giddens with, you know, 12 carries, a lot of that was garbage time. But what that does signal to me is that he's clearly the handcuff here. And Jonathan mm-hmm. Taylor is a player who I believe, I don't say he's injury prone, but he's had some issues with, I believe, with his ankles and whatnot. So it's just something to keep on your radar, as I do believe that Giddens is a player who is the direct backup now to Jonathan Taylor. Tyler Warren is for real. I believe he had over a 30% target share in this game. Kudos to you if you drafted him. I think this is going to stick. And it's really just going to be him and the Pittman show. I was definitely team Downs over Pittman, probably taking an L here. I don't want to overreact too much, but just based on how things looked, yeah. It's definitely looking like we got a healthy Pittman and that he is the alpha in this offense. So unfortunate for some of my down shares, but that is what I think is probably going to happen just after one game. So I believe Tyler Warren, if you drafted him and started him, he can be a tight end one for you all year long. And kudos for those people who stayed on the Pittman train, as I certainly did not.
Yeah, definitely a bit of a bummer, you know, pouring one out for my man Josh Downs, but you know, we'll see. It's only one game. Maybe this whole thing will flourish and include even more pass catchers, which is probably not the same level of optimism we're having for the Miami side of things with this game. Before we get on to the next one, did we learn anything from Miami? Do we even care?
It's disgusting, man. It was probably one of our favorite offenses a couple years ago, and now it's turned into you know, I'm not out completely. Like, maybe the Colts defense is really good and they just had their number, but man, you got to be concerned about all these pieces across the board. You know, for me, Chan's still the number one guy there. I'm going to be starting him up every week. He was able to kind of save things late, it looks like, with that receiving touchdown. He's probably the one guy I have the most confidence in. And then I feel at this point in time, like Tyreek Hill and Waddle are just kind of, you know, maybe upside flex options at best. I have a tough time getting Waddle in my top 24, man. This offense was just super disappointing. The most disappointing offense, I think, on the week for me. The lines are up there, but for just how they kind of attacked this game against the Colts defense, who might be stronger than I thought, but at the same time, I thought they should have done better, man. I have the I wouldn't say I have red flags ready to go to panic, but man, I would say out of all the offenses we saw, this is probably the one I'm most concerned about. And if I have pieces, I'm watching closely because things could get ugly real quick.
Definitely. Yeah, it's either them or a team we're going to talk about a little bit later. Definitely, you know, panic button is always a dangerous thing to hit in week one, but sometimes it's definitely worth it. Now, moving into our next game, the New England Patriots have probably my number one receiver target this week on the waiver wire. Might not be the most popular answer in the world. If you want like immediate production, obviously the Hollywood Brown 16 target thing, like, yes, do the thing. But I'm thinking a little bit more long term. I'm thinking if this role can stick throughout the remainder of this season and this player and this offense continues to grow together, it could be pretty interesting. And that is Mr. Kayshon Booty. 0.5% rostered on ESPN, 1% rostered in Yahoo. He's available. He's everywhere. He was able to corral 6 catches, 103 receiving yards on 8 targets. I mean, that is some pretty high-end production. The only other player besides, you know, tight end Hunter Henry who got particularly close that's a primary pass catcher in the target department was DeMario Douglas, and he ended up with a touchdown, but -2 receiving yards. So clearly he's got to figure out how to move the ball forward. See, Pop, it's you want to You catch the ball, you run forward, not backwards. It's how the game works. But that's really about all I have to talk about in terms of the Patriots. There's plenty to dig into with this backfield. I know you've definitely got some thoughts there, but just the Patriots in general, how the vibes looking?
Vibes are okay. You know, I would say I'm not in nor out. You know, I think it's too early for somebody who's really in on Drake May to be out on things. Like, obviously, we'd love to see more than 287 yards and one touchdown from 46 passing attempts. That's a lot of passing attempts. So a little disappointed there. Love the Butte take. You know, Hunter Henry's always been steady. There's really nothing too surprising outside of Butte. I will say Trayvon Henderson, it was, you know, a little bit of a concern here because he definitely was not the featured back, but I also would like to note that while he was not the featured back, we're talking 7 carries to Ramondre Stevenson and 5 to Henderson. So they just didn't run the ball much in this one with 18 total rush attempts. But Henderson getting 6 targets for 6 catches and 24 yards tells me things are going to be better. He's the primary passing back there. Henderson stays on flex radar going forward, not panicking on Henderson, and will continue to start as Stevenson did take his 7 carries, but for 15 yards at 2.1 yards per carry. He stays not good at football.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely, you know, that about sums it up as far as they go. Definitely keep an eye on that backfield. Definitely keep an eye on how this season continues to unfold for New England. It could be fun, or it could continue to be low-key, kind of frustrating. Speaking of something that's low-key, kind of frustrating, I swear to God, man, if Brock Bowers is out next week or misses any extended time with this knee injury, I am going to personally feel very victimized, and I will be very screwed if he is hurt. I only bring this up just because I just want to make a quick pitch. Michael Mayer, he's a pretty good tight end himself. You know, there was once upon a time where we thought pretty highly of this guy. In a world where there's no Bowers, he's probably going to see a much greater complement of snaps and probably get some looks coming his way. That's just something to think about. Wanted to throw that out there. Any other fun thoughts from the Las Vegas Raiders and what ended up being a pretty cool win for them?
Nah, man. I mean, the thing that you got to point out is Bowers was a part-time tight end in this game. I mean, that was probably the most alarming piece of this, is that they decided to not feature Brock Bowers all that much. You know, taking a look at him, he had a 51% snap share, which is asinine for how good he is at football. But nevertheless, it's exactly what they decided to do. But still, he's so good at football that even when he's out there only half the time, he still gets 8 targets for 5 catches and 103 yards. My concern is they're tipping their hand to the defenses that if Bowers is out there, that they're going to be passing the ball. We'll see what happens, man. But the rest isn't surprising. We saw Jacoby Myers eat up a bunch of, you know, targets and receptions. Jeanty's the bell cow here. Nothing really to add. Again, the offense very much operated like we thought it would. Not too interested in Trey Tucker or Thornton, but good to see them get involved.
Oh, definitely. You know, and also deeper league managers, if Geno Smith is, you know, appealing to you, I think you could definitely do worse. All right. We now take ourselves into our next game, Arizona Cardinals, New Orleans Saints. Tyler, tell me what we need to know from this one.
Start with the Saints side of the ball. Kamara is the running back you want there. Absolutely no surprise there. Kendra Miller does kind of look like the handcuff, but he'd probably split with Neal in the event that Kamara sits. Olave, 13 targets, 7 for 54. He's going to soak up targets when he's healthy and out there. Rashid Shaheed kind of, you know, is one of those things. It's good to see the 9 targets, but, you know, 6 for 33 really speaks to how poor the quarterback play was with Rattler. I mean, you got a guy throwing 46 passes, but only completing 27 of them for 214 yards and no touchdowns. I don't think this is getting better with Rattler. So that is my main concern here. I think the only real takeaway I have is Juwan Johnson, man. He's a full-time tight end. He's a full-time player, 11 targets, 8 for 76. He's a guy that you're going to be able to count on. If you're going to lose Bowers, for example, go for Mayer, but there's a good chance Juwan Johnson's out there, and he's a guy that in a pinch that you need to be prioritizing at tight end, is I believe the usage and the routes run and the snaps are all something that we need to be paying attention to with Juwan Johnson, as Rattler clearly is not that good of a quarterback, but we'll get the ball to, Johnson Olave probably for the short and intermediate ones. So nothing too crazy there. It's an offense that we probably don't want to be too involved with, but again, tight end's a tough position and Juwan Johnson's a big takeaway there.
On the other side of the ball, speaking of tight ends that are heavily involved, shout out Trey McBride getting out there immediately. 9 targets, 6 catches. But, you know, we kind of figured he was going to do well. That's not really much of a surprise. there were some pretty interesting things from this game with the Cardinals. I'll add my, you know, quick little note before I throw it over to you. Are we worried about Trey Benson, you know, kind of like ruining the whole James Conner experience at all? Because like a pretty hefty workload for Trey Benson, who recorded significantly more rushing yards in this game, 69 to James Conner's 39 on four fewer touches.
Not panics. My take on this is Cardinals operated pretty much exactly how they thought they would through the air. It's McBride and the Terrison. But if Connor's still going to see the work through the pass game and Benson's not, I'm not too worried about it. If we is 60% of the, you know, kind of rushing market share between the running backs, at least go towards Connor, and then Connor's the pass game guy, I think it'll work out just fine. I'm not sweating this at all. I don't necessarily believe in Trey Benson long term. You know, wish him the best. It was good to see him do well, but you know, he had a 52-yard run on that 8 for 69. That was really kind of padding that up there. I mean, he is that kind of player that he's going to be able to get those. But no, I'm not sweating Trey Benson, but he does find himself as a pretty strong handcuff.
All right, now we can switch gears over to another NFC contest between the New York Giants and my beloved Washington Commanders. Shout out the Commanders. Shout out the greater Washington, D.C. area. They had themselves quite the game, didn't they? Especially the rookie running back, Bill, our friend, Jacory Kroski-Merritt, 82 rushing yards and a touchdown. Ended up getting some pretty substantial work in this one. Just wanted to give a quick shout out to our friend Bill before I hand it over to you, Tyler. Any big takeaways from this game? Anything really, you know, kind of catch your eye? But because I think it at least from the Commander side of things, it kind of went the way that I thought it was going to.
Yeah, absolutely. I expect more targets to find their way to Terry McLaurin going forward. It was good to see Debo get involved. Clearly going to be a flex option going forward. And then Eckler is the pass catching running back. This was all exactly how we expected it to be. I do expect probably a little bit to go to Bill Kroski-Merritt going forward in terms of rushing. I mean, he was 10 for 82, 8.2 yards average, 42 yard long. I mean, the guy was good. He's their best rusher. So nothing too crazy here. We can trust Bill going forward. And, you know, frankly, I think Debo is a guy that we can certainly be slotting in the flex going forward as well.
No, 1,000%. And also, sorry, listeners, if you are, hopefully you didn't drop anybody too important to take a chance on Chris Rodriguez. If you listened to us last week and you did the whole pre-week one pickup on Chris Rodriguez, hey, it didn't quite work out, but hey, that's why you just take some of these chances. It's the end of your bench anyway. That's what it's for. Now, on the Giants side of things, this was a little bit spicy, but let me know how you feel about this. If you know that you're going to need quarterback help and you have a deep enough bench, do you just go pick up Jackson Dart now?
Yes. Yes, man. Russell Wilson sucks, dude. It's over for him, man. So nothing too crazy here whatsoever. Well, Malik Nabers had 12 targets, but 5 for 71. That's going to get better with a better quarterback. Wandell, 6 for 55, continues to be a PPR, like, high-floor merchant as he's been his whole career. And then Tyrann Tracy is clearly the starter here with 10 rushes and also 5 targets. Not concerned about Cam Scadabo here whatsoever. So it's exactly as I thought it would be. We have Nabers. He's a stud. Wandell is good in PPR leagues, and Tyrann Tracy is a starter. Commander's got a good defense. Things will get better, especially if they go to Dart. But you might have to, in the meantime here, put up with some pretty big stinkers if they're going to continue to trot out Russell Wilson, man. We just got to start calling Jackson Dart's name, and I think this whole offense takes a step forward.
Really hope so. You know, it's we are officially on Jackson Dart watch as far as we are concerned for fantasy purposes and just for general New York Giants purposes. We're going to have to schedule in one more break before we get to the end of our show, but don't worry, we still have all the rest of the games to get into and all sorts of fantasy takeaways, including some stuff that ties into some big news that dropped on this Monday that we are recording. Don't go anywhere. What is up, everybody? This is still the Crossing Routes podcast. Still Herm, still Tyler O, still talking through some 2025 NFL Week 1 action. And we got to talk about the Carolina Panthers and Jacksonville Jaguars game. A lot of interesting fantasy goodness coming out of this one. Tyler, we'll start by talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars. Any fun things from their side of the ball that we need to be paying attention to?
Brian Thomas is going to be fine. Travis Hunter, great to see him in the slot and getting that kind of usage, even though it was 6 for 33. He'd had 8 targets. He's a full wide receiver. That's going to get better. Brenton Strange seems to be like he could be talked about as a streamer. Really good to see him as a full-time tight end. We kind of talked about that a couple times before, but I mean, to see Brenton Strange out there with the 79% snap share and have a very respectable game of four targets, four catches, and 59. Pretty cool. Etienne's the bell cow here now, absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, that's really all there is to it, man. That's really all there is to it. I don't really have too much to say. But is there something else you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, you know, because I think the difficult part about discussing this game for Jacksonville, especially from the backfield, is that there's no point in talking about what Tank Bigsby did, because Tank Bigsby is no longer on the team. He ended up getting traded to the Philadelphia Eagles. Surprise! Ha-ha! We didn't forget. We did know. Basil Tootin, we are officially on watch. Folks, I think it's starting to get a little bit more serious. Obviously, Travis Etienne hauling, you know, 16 carries, ending up getting three targets, 19 total, you know, touches that he had on this. You know, it's not like there's going to be work available to Tootin immediately, but I think, you know, the biggest hurdle that he had to playing time, at least on the depth chart, is now gone. Are you more excited about Basil Tootin now? Because I think on Yahoo, he is over 50% rostered, but on ESPN, he is still available in over half of leagues.
As a direct backup who's got upside, yeah, man. I'll put him on the bench.
1,000%. Now, Carolina Panthers side of the ball. Anything you want to hit there?
It's Chuba. Tet, 5 for 68. Fine debut, but on 9 targets. That's really all there is to it. I mean, Bryce Young's got to get better. We'll see how it goes. We've seen him play bad. We've seen him play good. But nothing to add here. I don't think this offense is good enough to where we need to look beyond the top wide receiver and the top running back, man. We can move on from this one.
Yeah, RIP believing in Bryce Young season. Now, we get ourselves into our next game that also features a quarterback who was the number one overall pick in the NFL draft, the Tennessee Titans and the Denver Broncos. We'll start with the Denver Broncos because I think they're probably a little bit more fantasy relevant. Any big takeaways from this one for you, Tyler, with the Broncos?
Honestly, I think the Titans' defense is good, and I'm not panicking whatsoever on Bo Nix. So I'm going to continue to trot him out as a low-end QB1, not sweating that one. I think the bigger – and then obviously I'll just say the pass catchers, Cortland Sutton continues to be the locked-in wide receiver one there too. So just continue trotting him out. Don't have any concerns whatsoever with how that works. Obviously, Ingram, serious concerns with him with a 34% snap share, not a full-time player, not a guy we can count on, a guy who I am counting on some leagues, but I'm now going to be looking into other options. But I got to say, man, the running backs is a little bit of a mess. What happened to, you know, I think one of the things we love is Sean Payton and the running backs. They crush. They catch so many balls. Well, little did you know that the guy catching the balls was going to be Tyler Beatty, I believe his name is. 6 yep. Targets, 2 for 5. Harvey, 1 target. Dobbins, 2. I mean, I don't know what we're going to do week-to-week basis, man, with these guys. I mean, 16 carries for Dobbins and only 6 for Harvey. Obviously, Harvey had a 50-yard run. This is just, I honestly think we got to start Dobbins. He had more targets. He had more rushes. I don't think it's going to be Harvey time yet. For those counting on RJ Harvey for their fantasy teams in redraft, man, I'm going to have a hard time starting Harvey in week 2. That's just a fact.
No, it might take a while, especially because if I recall correctly, just, you know, watching through that game as it was going on, Tyler Beatty in those like 2-minute drill situations, those snaps that like those precious snaps that like if you're running back, you really want to be part of that on offense. That was Tyler Beatty. That wasn't RJ Harvey. That wasn't J.K. Dobbins. And Beatty did a pretty good job. So like it's definitely a little bit weird. Thankfully, the other team we're talking about doesn't have nearly as complicated of a backfield. Any big takeaways from the Tennessee Titans?
You really got to dig into this one because I do believe that the Broncos are the best defense in the NFL. Tony Pollard is a workhorse, might even be a low-end running back one in the short term here, easily high-end running back two. There's no one taking anything from him. Julius Chestnut, a.k.a. J-Nut, is really just out there to give him a breather. Other than that, man, I think Ridley, I haven't looked into the stats yet, but, I mean, Patrick Surtain is around. That's never going to be a good day. The only thing that really sticks out to me is the rookie Alec Aominor with 7 targets. Even though it was only 2 for 13, it was a great defense. But if they can keep this up, it's pretty clear to me that this could be a 1-2 punch of Ridley and Aominor going forward. Not necessarily run into the waiver wire for Alec Aominor, as there's a lot of good wide receivers who have noted in this podcast. But a guy I'm certainly going to be keeping my eye on going forward when there's softer matchups for them to exploit when they're playing some defenses that might be a little more human.
Absolutely. You know, a poor one out for our man, Tyler Lockett. You were good to us for a very long time. Moving into our next game, talk about a team that doesn't have a complicated passing game at all. The Seattle Seahawks. It's Jackson, Smith, and Jigba, and that's it, right?
Oh, my God, dude. I mean, I think it was like a 60% target share when I was looking at the numbers. That's not going to happen every week. Good for JSN. He's pretty much locked himself in as a wide receiver one without a doubt, just considering what we're going to be seeing and what they're going to be rolling out here. You know, the big thing that we have to talk about is obviously going to be Charbonnet and Walker and the split favoring Charbonnet, as you and I were both pretty strong proponents of Kenneth Walker going into the season. Seeing Charbonnet with a 58% snap share and Kenneth Walker with a 40% snap share is not something you love to see as somebody who really liked Kenneth Walker or just people who wanted really liked it. I mean, the one thing that I kind of hang my hat on a little bit is Kenneth Walker did have 3 targets for 3 catches, only 4 yards, but 0 targets for Charbonnet. If Kenneth Walker is going to continue to get the pass game work over Charbonnet, he's going to probably keep himself in the flex conversation. But, you know, it was not a good game for Ken Walker on the ground, but we're talking 10 carries for Walker to 12 to Charbonnet. We hate to see it be a bit of a split here, but I'm not panicked just yet on Kenneth Walker. Obviously, I think, you know, me calling him a top 12 running back might end up being a little bit rich, but I'm not ready to just to call Kenneth Walker dead. Let's see how things shake out here over the next couple weeks, especially considering Walker was missing some practice this offseason, dealing with an injury. Maybe that has something to do with it. Could be telling myself stories. I get it, but also not panic on Walker. I want to see a few more weeks before I seed the Charbonnet leading running back narrative.
I think patience is going to be the most important thing for this one. I want to give a big shout out to our boss, Jeff Ratcliffe. One of the really cool things he did this offseason and still does, you know, his daily dive article, keeping everybody in the loop on all the, you know, fantasy relevant news that you need to be aware of for your fantasy teams. Ken Walker foot injury. They were very specific about keeping him out of preseason action, doing a bunch of that stuff, trying to keep him on ice, get him to this point so that way he could be healthy for the beginning of the season. I do really think there is just something to do with that. Maybe kind of just easing him back into it. But like you said, worst case scenario, there's a workable situation where both guys are usable. It's just, you know, one of them might be a little bit more valuable than the other, and we had them flip-flop. And just a quick note, Week 2 preview, that's not really what we're doing in this podcast, but the Seattle Seahawks are going to play the Pittsburgh Steelers next week. That run defense got gashed by the New York Jets. Without rookie Derek Harmon on that defensive line, they were pretty prone. I would definitely be very enthusiastic about the Seattle Seahawks backfield in fantasy and also just like DFS contests and stuff. You know, just shout out if you want to, you know, prop bets, look at those, see what's up there. On the other side of the ball, the San Francisco 49ers, we've got a lot to talk through because they didn't make it out alive, unfortunately. They got hurt.
Yeah, man. I mean, Christian McCaffrey didn't get hurt and had a great game, so let's just get that out of the way. It continues to be yes. high-end running back one, dominated the carries with 22, dominated the receiving work like he does with 9 receptions on 10 targets. We love to see it. Clearly, Brian Robinson is the backup. No surprise there whatsoever after the trade. Pearsall is probably pretty real here. 7 for 4 for 108. And then Kittle came out hot, 4 for 4 for 25 and 1 touchdown, but now he's going to be out for a couple weeks with a hamstring injury. And more importantly, it looks like Purdy actually might be out with a toe injury, which is going to put the brakes, I think, on Pearsall for me. I believe Mac Jones is the backup. Is that correct?
Yep.
Mac Jones is the backup. We know he's, we've seen him do well in the past, so I'm not completely out. But, going forward, it's going to be Christian McCaffrey. And that's probably going to be the only player I have a lot of confidence in with Mac Jones behind at center. I don't know if I have the stones to bench Pearsall. It would depend on the team. But, man, I don't think I'm going for the backup tight end here while Kittle's healing. So a lot to kind of take in, a healthy McCaffrey, but now a hurt Purdy and a hurt Kittle. I think going forward with Mac Jones in the game, it's really just going to be the Christian McCaffrey show for me, and kind of just going to wait to see and how this kind of unfolds and what this injury actually looks like for Brock Purdy.
Absolutely. You know, it's going to be tough to have any level of confidence in this offense as long as they're dealing with these issues. And I think the same can be said for one of the next teams we're talking about in our next game, albeit for different reasons. But I think that's a pretty fair thing to say about the Detroit Lions. That offense, you know, first game without Ben Johnson being their offensive coordinator, it was a little bit rough. Granted, it was against the Packers defense that, you know, really good last year, just got Micah Parsons. I don't know if you heard about it. So there's a little bit of that to it. But, you know, the Lions, this is your territory, man. How are we feeling about this? You feeling okay moving forward, at least, maybe?
Okay. I would say feeling okay would be a little, let's call it accurate, I guess, because I don't want to panic. I don't want to panic, but it, I think the departures, not just including Ben Johnson, are playing a fact here. We're talking, they lost Zeitler as a guard. They lost Ragno at center. They lost Ben Johnson. I mean, there's just pieces here that are missing, and I have some serious concerns. I do think the Packers have a really good defense, but I think anyone who is expecting the Lions of the last year, maybe the year before, is going to be sorely disappointed, as this team is going to have to grind a little bit more out than we thought. I do think they right the ship, but, you know, it could be signaling the end of an era where the Lions are just the odds off favorite to win the division. I mean, I think once Micah Parsons came over the Packers were the favorite to win the division. And this game really showed that that might be true. So I definitely am a little concerned as a Lions fan that our best days are behind us.
And at least as far as it translates, you know, to the receiving game, like Amon-Ra St. Brown's still relatively usable. Sam Laporta had himself a good game. You know, Jahmyr Gibbs, though, the 10 catches, that's pretty nifty. That's very fun. I'd love to see that.
And offensively, nothing's too crazy. I do think David Montgomery is going to be a tough play if the offense isn't going to, you know, be as good or return to form. But the rest of the guys, you know, if this offense isn't humming, there's concern with Montgomery. And honestly, there's concern with Jameson Williams. I think those are the guys that I have concerns if this offense isn't humming like we've seen over the last couple of years. Gibbs is fine. I think Amon-Ra St. Brown's going to be fine. Laporta might like trade some games with Jameson Williams, maybe Montgomery, but there's just not enough for all these dudes to eat if this offense isn't operating at the highest levels we've seen in the last couple of years. So definitely a little concerned going forward.
And on the other side of the ball, the Green Bay Packers offense was very similar to what it looked like last year. That's kind of my assessment. You feel in the same way?
Josh Jacobs is the man. You can't really nail down anyone else on that offense, man. It's just that's the way it goes with this team. It's better for real-life football, without a doubt, but trying to figure out what wide receiver to start any given week is going to be a crapshoot. I think, you know, Jaden Reed's probably the guy I have the most interest in of all those guys, but at the same time, you know, Tucker Kraft's a good tight end. I mean, Tucker Kraft's a good start because of the position at tight end, but the wide receiver's a little bit of a mess. If you tell me to pick one, it's going to be Jaden Reed, but honestly, it's better for real life than it is for fantasy, man. I just do not draft Green Bay wide receivers, as it is tough to nail down what they're going to do. I mean, Dubes is like their leading wide receiver with a 71% snap share. And then they split. Golden had a 48%, Wicks had a 46. Jaden Reed only had 38% snap share, man. So just trying to nail down what this is going to look like week to week is a losing battle, and one that I do not want to figure out. So it's tough going here.
Well, thank the heavens, because our next team we're talking about does not have that problem. We know exactly what to make of the Los Angeles Rams passing game. It's Puka Nacua and Davante Adams. That is where the ball goes.
70% of the targets, just about 70% of the targets go to those two, and Kyren's the lead back. I have no notes on the Rams. They're exactly the team that we thought they were.
Bingo, bango. Over to the Houston Texans. Any fun stuff going on there? I mean, the backfield was like, I don't know, Nick Chubb looked slightly better than I thought he would. I guess that's kind of my only big thing. Otherwise, they were kind of just meh.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. I mean, it's like, oh, Cade Stover is splitting reps with Dalton Schultz, but we're really counting on Dalton Schultz in the first place? Certainly not. And then Nico Collins will have better days ahead of him. I did like what you said about how, you know, Hutchinson, Jaden Higgins, Noel, like nobody really kind of stepped up. Maybe that does bode well for Christian Kirk coming back. But right now, man, I don't think there's anyone in this offense that I start with any sort of confidence besides Nico Collins going forward.
Yeah, you know, there is kind of something to, you know, I mean, anytime you're throwing out Justin Watson just to run wind sprints and stuff, you know you're down to some pretty dire straits in your receiver room. If Christian Kirk does come back from that hamstring, maybe it could be kind of fun. But yeah, otherwise, we are on the same page as far as that game goes. And getting into our final game, the really, really, really fun one that kept us up all super late, but the end was totally worth it. The Buffalo Bills eking out Baltimore Ravens, and the just utterly godlike performance we got from Derrick Henry. I don't know about you. I feel pretty stupid for not having Derrick Henry on more of my teams. I should have drafted him more. That man just
defies
all logic.
I feel the same way. I didn't draft him a lot because he was kind of going on that turn at the end of drafts, and I didn't have a lot of late picks, and I wasn't going to take him as a top five option, which maybe sounds silly now. And by the time it came back around to me, he just wasn't there. Not that I was fading him on purpose. Other than that, man, it's pretty typical. You know, Zay Flowers is going to find himself. He had a great game, you know, 7 for 143 and 1. Don't expect that every single week, but good for him. I think Mark Andrews is going to have better days. His 1 for 1 for 5 is obviously hugely disappointing, but I'm not necessarily sweating it. This team only threw 19 times and had 14 completions. Mark Andrews' days will come. Yeah. That's not something that I'm sweating. And then to move to the Bills side of the ball, I think the only real story for me is, you know, is Keon Coleman might be real. He's a guy that I think I'd prioritize on waivers at my number one spot for wide receivers, maybe even on the week if he's still out there. He's not going to be available in every single league. I totally get that. But he's definitely a guy that I look and say 11 targets, caught 8 one in the, for 112 and 1. We need to be paying attention to this. I definitely was out on Coleman. Feel a little bit silly now. But if he can really take the reins on this alpha wide receiver role that's been open for years, it could be something big. So shout out Keon Coleman. I think he could really be this dude. We're going to have to see where it's at. He certainly is going to be a start for me, at least in the flex going forward.
Oh, for sure. And I think, you know, just looking at the rest of the Buffalo receivers, you know, Khalil Shakir still got it done. Josh Palmer, pretty underrated performance, both 9 targets apiece. I mentioned those two guys specifically because it kind of ties into the fact that, like, if Dalton Kincaid hadn't found the end zone, would we even be talking about him right now?
No, because he's a part-time wide receiver. I think he had like 55% snaps, man. This is just, he's just not it. If you can sell Dalton Kincaid to somebody, go ahead and do it, man. I'm this might be one of his better games of the season, so I'm patting on Dalton Kincaid.
No, for sure. Honestly, probably one of my bigger dynasty L's that I have taken. I remember that year he was coming in. I spent a few first round picks on that guy. It might be time to give up and say goodbye to Dalton Kincaid, much like it is time for us to give up on this episode of the podcast, the Crossing Routes podcast, and say goodbye. We will talk to you all again next week. I am Herms. He is Tyler O. We will talk to you again after week 2. Woohoo!